Welcome to the Dr. Francavilla Show. I'm your host, Dr. Carolyn Francavilla, board-certified family physician and diplomate of the American Board of Obesity Medicine. I've been helping patients lose weight to treat and prevent medical problems for the last 10 years, and I'm taking what I've learned from them to you. In this podcast, you will learn the science behind why you struggle with your weight and what to do about it, tips for common challenges, work to fight bias about what a healthy weight really is, and improve your relationship with food and your body. Please remember that while I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. This podcast is meant to be informational in nature only, not medical advice. Please seek out care from your physician for your specific needs. Okay, let's get started. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Dr. Francavilla Show. This week, I have an awesome guest with us, Dr. Maribeth Orr, and she is a fellow obesity physician. She retired from family medicine in 2021 to do full-time obesity medicine. She works at Heartland Weight Loss in Lawrence, Kansas, and sees patients 12 and up. She has 4 children of her own, and she also has her own personal struggle with obesity since adulthood, starting in medicine when she was in residency and medical school. So she will probably share some of that today because we are going to talk about what to expect on your weight loss journey, some of the emotions that can come up, some of the ways your life may change, the good, the bad, and what you can expect. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Orr.
Thank you so much, Dr. Francavilla. I'm so happy to be here. Very honored.
Well, tell me how you came to the field of obesity medicine. How did you find this as your passion?
Absolutely. Well, I knew in family medicine, I wanted to do family medicine because I love variety and I love seeing all different types of people. I love seeing different types of conditions and a little bit of the challenge of trying to understand things. And throughout that journey, there was just kind of a common theme that kept coming up. And it was that a lot of patients kept struggling with excess weight and trying to lose weight. And they would come to me for advice on weight loss. And I didn't feel like I knew exactly what was going on, or I was well equipped with that. And in my own personal journey, I found myself in a similar situation with residency training, college, having children, all the struggles there. I found myself with excess weight as well. So trying to understand all of that and having patients also struggle, I wanted to learn more. That's when I found the Obesity Medicine Association, which I never knew existed before. I started diving into it. And then I found the American Board of Obesity Medicine. And that was just terribly enlightening, wonderfully enlightening, learning all the things that there was a big piece of science and almost kind of some education that I really missed out on in medical school. I always say it this way. Medical school, we were bombarded and we learn what's normal. This is a normal human body, normal physiology, maybe a little bit of pathology and a little bit on medications. And then you go to residency and you're just smacked with disease. And this is how you treat disease. And I thought, well, there's got to be something in between there. What leads to disease and what's happening? Is there something we can do? And that's what I started to understand and learn more about. So COVID was a perfect time to buckle down, study, and studied for the boards for obesity medicine. And that was quite fun, studying for a board exam. Who says that?
Like you said, there's so much science that really does exist for why people struggle with their weight and what we can do about it. But we did not learn that in our traditional education. And so those of us who are passionate about that have had to, do that on our own afterwards. Will you share maybe some of the highlights? Obviously, it's like hundreds of hours of studying to become an expert at this. But what are some of the highlights, some of the biggest take homes on the science that you learned that kind of opened your mind?
It truly is a very complex, dysfunctional state. And myself, in my own personal struggle with obesity, I always thought, I just don't have willpower. I'm probably lazy. But that didn't make sense. Like I'm a medical student. I'm a resident. I'm a mom. Lazy and lack of willpower and all those things, hardworking moms, those don't go together. They were far apart. So Yeah, so that's kind of what I learned was, the power of the neurohormonal drive and how dysfunctional it can really get. And like I said, kind of in our training, I learned, well, this is the normal, the way hormones react, and this is how neurotransmitters react in your brain, and this is happiness. And then there was just a lot of medications to try to reverse that, and but not a lot on really the nutritional side or the exercise side, other than the calorie counting and we must move more. Like there's so much more to it.
It is complicated, and there really
Complicated.
is biochemistry going on. And when someone has obesity, their body is not operating normally, right? And so some of the things that we would think might work don't always work in terms of just eating less and exercising more because of how complicated the biology is there. So we'll spare you the hours and hours of diagrams of all the hormonal access there.
I love learning that stuff though.
Yes, but like we'll talk more about this, like the way your life kind of changes on your weight loss journey. So tell me about some of the emotions you see for your patients and maybe that you experienced yourself in that weight loss journey. What does that look like? What can people expect emotionally when they are losing weight?
Yes, absolutely. I think at first, I know with my patients, when they come to see me, we go pretty heavy on that biochemistry and what affects it, and attacking and diving into, specific behavior modifications that we have to start to address. And when you learn all that at first, it's just overwhelming, I think. I know when I first started learning it myself, I felt almost consumed with, I need to change this, I need to change this. So many things. And I felt like maybe I needed to try to change everything all at once. But no, you don't need to change everything all at once. This is a journey, a process, and there's going to be different stages that you go through. Almost, and I hate to, compare it to grief, but almost kind of stages of grief at times. The shock, disbelief maybe at first of the things that you have to learn and try to understand and put into practice. Then there can be anger. I know I dealt with anger absolutely in my own personal journey. The anger of, ugh, why can this, why is this so hard? Why do I keep running into these struggles literally every day? Because when we get into our habits, and those become comfortable and those become day to day, but then we're asking to change those and do things different. There's kind of stages of grief, I think, that we go
I think
through.
when we recognize obesity as a disease, it's a little bit of like a mindset flip because most people have done what you were talking about, where they've internalized it a lot. They've blamed themselves. They've fallen into this belief that it's about willpower, which it absolutely is not. And when we start thinking about it as a disease, we would not never tell someone they should be like willpowering themselves out of their eczema, right? Like if you have this itchy skin rash, like, well, maybe if you just tried harder, you wouldn't have the rash, right? Like if you tried harder, you wouldn't have cancer, right? Like if you tried harder, maybe you should just try to be happy and not have depression, right? You're like, what? Like that doesn't make sense for any of those other medical issues that people have. And so I think when we start to understand the weight physiology, which the thing I emphasize the most is that metabolic adaptation, right? Our metabolic rate goes down when we start to lose weight, and hunger, which is a real chemical signal, goes up. Fullness goes down. There's more biology to it than that, but that's a really fundamental concept that affects all of us, right? When we start to lose weight and when we start to think about the biology there, it's as crazy to try to fight that with willpower as it's try as it is to try to cure your rash or your depression with willpower.
It can be very frustrating because, as we learned from the OMA conference and what we know about it too, is the human body really doesn't, it wants to maintain weight. And it's got all these mechanisms in place that are going to fight it. And that is a frustrating piece.
My patients, though, once I explain that and really look them right in the eye and say, like, this is not your fault, then there is like there's crying very frequently. There's this overwhelm. And, you know, someone kind of challenged me on this on an Instagram post and was like, well, that's really hopeless to just say it's biology. And that's not at all what I'm trying to say. You're making the space like, what? It's not hopeless. Yeah. It's giving an explanation. And when we understand why someone is struggling, now we can do something about it, right? And we can target that. We can figure out how to handle hunger. We can figure out how to make a plan that makes sense as opposed to just trying to tell people to keep working harder.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And going through those stages and trying to understand, you know, this frustration, anger, happiness, you know, there's actually there's stress that comes with happiness and winning too. And just those expectations that I think a lot of patients, I know I was hard on myself too. Like, oh my gosh, I really messed up. And so what we like to talk about here at Heartland Weight Loss too is, you know, finding a balance and letting yourself, you know, deviate when you need to deviate, as long as we're getting back to, you know, our focus. I always say when life knocks you down, do a burpee.
People will complain about burpees at the gym, right? I'm like, it's just falling and getting back up. That's all a burpee is. Like, we can all do them, right? Like, you
it's
know,
an opportunity.
A pull up, that's harder, right? But like, we all fall down and get back up. We can all do
absolutely.
That. Yeah. I love it. We may have lost some people already. They're like, oh my God, are they going to make me do burpees? What's about to happen here?
No.
But
maybe,
you know,
in the future.
I do think there's no perfection in this, right?
No.
Like, and I think people get that, you know, and some people may have done, quote, the perfect diet for months at a time and had good results. And the problem is that for the vast majority of us, that's just not sustainable, right? You're going to want to have a piece of cake at a wedding.
Sure.
You're going to get stuck in an airport and have to eat whatever's available. Like, there's no perfection in this. And we're not doing ourselves any good when we do that. But I will often say every meal, every minute is a new opportunity, right? So if you didn't eat a healthy breakfast, well, you don't have to let that ruin what you're eating for lunch, right? Like, you can always start over.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I try to tell my patients to get to a place where you're going to feel overwhelmed at times and sometimes defeated. My goodness, I feel defeated often still in my own journey, but I start to get to a place where sometimes that defeat and then coming back gives me more power and energy. Like I say, you know, embrace the suck.
Yes. Okay. So tell me about your embrace the suck mantra.
Yes. That is, the first time I heard that, I was doing a long distance triathlon and I was about halfway through a 56-mile bike ride climbing a hill. And there was a spectator on the side that I think saw in my face that this is awful. I hate everything right now. I don't want to climb this hill. I was just, you know, mashing away at the pedals going up the hill. And she yelled, embrace the suck.
I have like goosebumps because I can imagine like how you needed that in the moment.
I did. And ever since then, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is good stuff. And when she said that, I thought, it is. It made me laugh, first of all. It put a smile on my face. So right away, you know, I went through 30 seconds of not feeling any pain because it was a great something she yelled at me and it helped me. And I found that power in my legs to continue to pedal through up that hill and I made it. So the way we look at embrace the suck is, you know, sometimes when life throws us these challenges, be thankful. Okay, I have a challenge. Like we said, look at it as an opportunity. I'm happy. I am in this space. I have the ability, the power to attack this. And whatever it looks like for me is going to be good for me. And I'm going to make this a winning situation. So things that feel really, really hard in the end, you find your way through it. So you embrace the suck and find a way to enjoy that toughness because you're going to come out
like being proud of yourself, right? Like, this is hard and it's not fair and it sucks.
Yeah.
Like, why am I doing this? And at the same time, I am proud of myself and I'm not going to quit and it's hard.
Yeah.
And on the other side of that, I've accomplished this hard thing.
Yeah. I was just having a conversation about that yesterday with my 13-year-old who has a track meet coming up tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, it's going to be hard. And that's why you signed up, because it's going to be hard. You can do hard things.
Yes, I love it. You can do hard things. Yes. My mantra that I fall to the most when I'm running is I do hard things so I can do harder things. And
Yes.
so, a big place that I draw from when I'm doing whatever it is that's hard for me is like, what other hard thing have I done before? Right. Like,
Yeah.
and so like you've had four children, right? Like those have
Yeah.
all sorts of challenges. Just like literally
Yeah.
getting the child out of your body is the, is a hardship, right? And so
Yeah.
whatever that hard thing is that we have to draw on too, sometimes to be like, I've done something else that's hard. And when I
Yeah.
finish this or I am consistent with this, I'm gonna have another thing I can check off and say I did this hard thing, even if right now it
Yeah.
really sucks.
Yes.
I like it. Embrace the
Absolutely.
suck.
Embrace it.
Do you find that for you or for your patients, having other people that are going through that same thing? Like when you were running this triathlon, you had someone next to you, right? Or a little ahead of you or a little behind you.
Sure.
There were other people doing it. But same thing when we're changing our lifestyle, how do you find that people's support around them helps them?
Absolutely. I always try to encourage my patients to, quote, kind of build their tribe. Get your family involved. Find friends, close friends that are with this that can support you and be there on your side through the ups and the downs, everything. So yeah, and that, it also goes back to that saying about it takes a village. And that's where, I try to, when patients come back in and we talk about this and we have these frequent follow-ups, like, yeah, just unload, unleash it here, let us hear it, and let's come up with ways and solutions to help you through this so that you're learning from it and you can come out the way you want and start to reach those goals. And sometimes it can feel really negative at times, but in every negative, there's got to be a positive. There's got to be
And so
something.
you're right. Yes, that's that optimistic sort of like looking for the silver lining
Yeah,
sort of thing.
it serves a purpose.
And so your support could be, your physician or whoever you're
Yep.
seeing to help. Support sometimes is people's family, though sometimes that's like not a source of support and that can be a challenge
Absolutely.
too. So, how do you help people who maybe their family or their friends, the people they're with on a daily basis, are not super supportive of what they're doing or the changes they're making?
That's always a tough one, isn't it? It's always tough because it's really easy just to say, well, just go find a new group of people. I
Hard,
mean,
especially if you live with those people, it's hard to find a new group of people.
right. Exactly. Well, we have a little handout here that we give our patients called Changing Your Environment. So that can be a little helpful, kind of that, what are some tools and tips and tricks? One of them is, if there's something in the home that doesn't, I mean, nutrition-wise, if there's something in the home that a family member wants and they feel it's essential for their own, what they need, but it doesn't align with your goals, eating-wise, I can give you an example. Reese's peanut butter cups. My husband's very good at having, an appropriate amount of Reese's peanut butter cups, a few here and there, not often. But I don't have that same approach to Reese's peanut butter cups. It can be very difficult for me to just have a few here and there. I just use that as an example. That's my own personal journey. So we've kind of made this pact. He has Reese's peanut butter cups, but they're not near me. So that's helpful
Do you
where
even know where they are?
I do not. And if I
Okay.
did know, we've tried that, like,
Yeah.
oh, just put them in your closet. But I told him to put it in his closet so I know they're there. So
I
that's
had a couple
useless.
like that where one of the partners actually, like hides the partner's food and will like give it to, and I was like, oh, that would not work for me. That would drive me nuts.
Yeah.
But it's like you have to figure out what strategies
Yeah.
work for you where you're like, I'm fine with you having those, but if
Yeah.
I see them, my brain lights up and it does
Yeah.
not have a good relationship with those foods. I cannot moderate that. I think a lot of us have those trigger foods, right? Where we're like, I just know that it's not a food that my brain just likes it too much. It's almost like alcohol for some people, right? Where you're like, if that food is there, it's a
Yeah.
problem food. So I think
Right.
recognizing that, but that is such a common challenge that we'll see is that someone else in the household wants or needs the food around and like navigating that. So that may be one
Yeah.
solution. Like you can have it in the house, but like I'd just prefer not to know where it is.
Yeah. Or make some negotiations somewhere in there. If there's a variety, Well, I don't like Cool Ranch Doritos, so we can have Cool Ranch Doritos, but don't buy the nacho cheese.
Yes. And then, sometimes it's just like out of sight. So I know for me personally, if it's on the counter and I can just see it, like I'm eating it before I think about it. But if it's behind the cabinet, then it gives me a pause to decide. And so you have to figure out what works in your food environment and kind of navigate with the people around you. So I like that. Thank you for that. That's a good example from your own household. And I'm with you on the Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oh,
That
man.
is a food that is, it is not a good moderation food. It's hard to have in moderation.
It is hard.
So what about those times when like the other people are really just not on the same team as you? Like, how do you power through or continue to reach your goals, help your patients reach their goals when the environment really is just not set up for that?
Wow. That's a tough one. And I'll be honest, I'm still trying to figure that one out. And I don't know, there's not one good answer for each patient. There's not, it's not a cookie cutter. It just, there's so many factors that go in there. And that just shows us again the nuances that come with the disease of obesity and the complexities that come with it. And the nuances, therefore, then of treatment, because everybody's journey is so very different. So that's a tough one. In those cases, sometimes I will recommend meal prep, meal delivery services where you have these companies that will deliver healthy meals to the home. I think another way would be to, if it's children, younger children, sometimes they like to really get involved in the meal prep and the cooking. And if you can have your children have some ownership into that, sometimes that can be helpful to get them interested into maybe healthier ideas in the home. Gosh.
So trying to engage people. You had mentioned at some point, like sometimes doing the healthy thing, doing the thing that's good for your health can look weird in the world we
Yes.
live in. Tell me more about that.
Absolutely. We talk about the SAD, the standard American diet. And it's called the standard American diet because it's standard. And what is, pretty much normal in America. And what am I trying to say? The struggle that people have trying to be abnormal. Because a lot of times, honestly, when we go through the nutritional foundation here, and I talk with patients, especially at that very first visit, and we're pretty specific about what that nutritional foundation looks like, it's like complete opposite of what is normal in every, this American household.
I mean, like I think one example for me is like I emphasize for my patients and try to also follow myself eating vegetables pretty frequently. I try to eat vegetables with each meal. And sometimes you'll be at a restaurant where there's really no vegetables listed. And so even and sometimes I see it more on like the kids' menu, right? Like the only option for kids is like macaroni and cheese and like a cheeseburger and French fries. And like I have to be the weird parent who's like, hey, any chance we could get like a side of cucumber to go with this or like a side of avocado or like, do you have anything, that like, especially when we're traveling or something. And one of the things I encourage my patients is like, it's okay to ask for what you need, right? Like, or if they're going to bring you bread, it's okay to be like, hey, can you just take that back? I don't want the bread. I don't need the bread. Can you just not serve it to me? It's okay to ask for what your body needs.
I see that too. And it's kind of funny. Like I have to take a comical or a fun approach to this and laugh about it and use it with humor, because I'll be at a, maybe a burger joint somewhere, and I'll order a double cheeseburger, hold the bun, give me a side salad, hold the fries. And sometimes, the person I'm ordering from, they just look at me like, you want a what and do what? And I just like, it's okay. We'll just walk through it slowly. So just do these things and I'll be happy. Like, yeah, but it seems to be more, a little more common to do that. So I'm getting less weird looks, or if you ask for, the side of steamed vegetables, hold the fries, it seems to be, I'm getting less resistance. So that's a good, that's progress.
And again, it's just honoring what your body needs, right? So don't feel pressured to eat something just because it's being served or everyone else is doing it. Like What are your goals? What's the nutrition plan that makes sense for your body? You know, if you were allergic to something or something made you sick, you wouldn't order it, right? And you would ask for a substitution. And same thing, if you're trying to eat a certain way that's in line with your health goals, like it's okay to like be a little bit of a picky customer.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if it goes very much against what's normal on the menu, it's okay to be abnormal. It's okay.
Yeah, I like it. I like the weirdos. I'm all about it. Yeah.
Oh, I always get along so well with them.
That's how we found each other.
Yeah.
All right. So when someone has lost a fair amount of weight and people are starting to notice when they've made it, you know, towards that part of their weight loss journey where people are noticing that they have done something, that they have lost weight, that can be really uncomfortable for people in lots of different ways. Tell me about that experience that you see for your patients and how you help navigate that.
Yes. See, a lot of patients along their journey too, they'll start to get advice from other, you know, from family members or friends, or they'll start putting things in there and, you know, all well-intentioned, of course. Or sometimes I've experienced patients that they've experienced almost a little bit of isolation, like people or friends that they had before maybe don't speak to them as often or approach them differently, or they sense some level of discomfort when somebody has lost weight with their friendships or, you know, close acquaintances. And that's understandable too, just because of our, you know, our weight loss culture and our mindsets in weight loss and just how difficult it is and how we've, you know, pretty much approached, and we still have this, you know, thinking that it's a lack of willpower or laziness or a character flaw. And when somebody starts to lose and they have noticeable physical, noticeable changes, it can be hard to understandable for other people to, you know, how do you approach that person? What do you say to them? I know I had that a lot of times in my own journey. I had people ask me if I was sick. I have my dental hygienist. I hadn't seen her in 6 months. And I just had a 6 months of where things were just really clicking for me. And I had improved with my metabolic health. And I had started to lose some weight. And it was enough for her to say, "Are you on any different medicines?" I could tell she wasn't sure. And she did. She just thought, "Have you been sick?" Like, "No, I've made some changes here lately since the last time I was here to have my teeth cleaned." And it can be a challenge. And so I'm still kind of developing my approach to that to help coach my patients through that part of the journey. It's like, we kind of need a textbook, a chapter on that too.
Yeah.
How to deal with weight loss, you know,
and family members. I always bring everything back to health. Right. And so actually someone, Dr. Orr and I were just at a conference together, you know, we were taking a picture together and they went to put their hand around me and they were like, "Oh, you're so tiny. Like, what size are you?" And I was that is just such an inappropriate question. Like, can we stop commenting on people's bodies? Like,
yes.
What the heck, you know? Like, and so I think like, it's okay to also tell people like, you know, it's not okay to comment on other people's bodies, right? Like,
yeah.
I think, you know, we know that we shouldn't comment on other things. Like, it's kind of okay to call people out socially. And I think redirecting it to health, right? Like you did, like, "I'm trying some new things. I've, you know, got my metabolic health dialed in," is a perfect way to redirect it and just talk about focusing on health. Because to me, that's why we care about weight, right? It's not
Absolutely.
About fitting some ideal image or being a certain size. We definitely are all healthy at different sizes. And
and
really
happy
redirecting
at all
the conversation
sizes.
Back to health.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
But sometimes people want it both ways. So I encountered this recently where someone had been on an injectable medication. They were doing great, losing weight. And a family member was like, "You know, I'm kind of worried about them. Do you think they've lost too much weight?" And I was like, you can't have it both ways. You can't be super worried about someone's health and then encourage them to lose weight for their health and then freak out when they do lose weight, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe just like let it go.
Right.
If you're worried about someone, direct them back to their doctor, right? Like, "Hey, does this person need to be worried? Is this healthy weight loss?" So, but yeah, it can definitely bring up a lot of emotions.
Yes, so much. And even, have you seen imposter syndrome at times, sometimes with your own patients?
Tell us about what you mean by that.
Yeah. So imposter syndrome would be somebody who's doing really well, having a lot of success, but doesn't connect themselves as the person that's made those successes. like there's a kind of a disconnect with, okay, great job. You worked hard. You accomplished your goals, but somebody else must have done that for you because it couldn't have been you. I hope I explained imposter syndrome right
like
there.
Like that lack of confidence, right?
Yeah, where lack of like, confidence.
No, you did this and you can keep doing it, right? Like it's not just going to go away on you. You can keep doing it.
Yeah. There's just so many emotions. I think that's the takeaway in, you know, any kind of weight loss journey, metabolic health journey is the whole emotional side and the human side of it. And it's hard to know what to expect other than there's going to be a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
And so be ready for all.
Do you ever recommend your patients see, you know, therapists or counselors to explore all of this too?
Honestly, I think everybody needs to see a therapist in the journey. Ideally it would be, okay, come see us for the metabolic side. We're going to do the obesity medicine side, but I would love to have that multidisciplinary approach where automatically we also have a mental health coach or therapist that's what they do all day. And they're there to support you. Absolutely. I think that would be wonderful. We have a list of therapists here locally that we give patients, but it kind of should go along with it, really.
Right.
We all need
we've discussed, I mean, there's so many emotions that we've discussed from happiness and being proud of yourself to this imposter syndrome, feeling guilt, feeling shame. So
defeat.
So that may, if for someone who's experiencing a lot of that, you know, working with a therapist, a counselor, or a coach may be really powerful.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, as we wrap up here, any final thoughts? Anything we missed?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk all day, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's just, just recognizing that this journey and, you know, with weight loss, it's emotion packed and there's hills. There are hills, but embrace the suck when you're on a hill and enjoy that journey then too, when you're on a downhill and when you can step back and look behind you then also and say, look what I did. I pedaled my way up that hill. It sucked, but I did it. And now I'm going to recharge because you know what? Also in every journey, there's going to be another hill.
Yes.
Kansas is not
it.
Flat. I was in Kansas when I did that race and everybody thinks Kansas is flat and no, it's not.
A lot of it is though. No,
Yeah, that's right. Most of
I'm
it
in
is
Denver.
Yes.
I'm like, it's a little flatter right now.
Okay. Yes. Right, compared to Denver.
And then if people want to connect with you, where can they find you?
I am on LinkedIn just with my Mary Beth Orr. And then I'm on Instagram and Facebook. And then we have our Heartland Weight Loss website, www.heartlandweightloss.com. I'm always happy to connect and just meet with people all over the place because I learn from every person I meet and try to take their personal journey, their professional journey. And I just want to be a sponge right now.
I love
just
it. I love it.
This up.
Well, we'll make sure all of that is in our show notes. And until next week, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Dr. Francavilla Show, where we learn about all things related to weight and health. If you love this podcast, make sure to leave those 5-star reviews and share this podcast with a friend or loved one. If you have a topic about weight and health you want me to tackle, head over to the website, thedrfrankavillashow.com, to submit your question. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss next week's episode. Take care.